This is Attack of the 20th Century. Thank you for joining us as we explore science fiction, fantasy, and horror films of the 20th century. I am your host, Jeff.
And I'm your other host, Kim.
Welcome to episode 10, where we review The Monster Squad, directed by Fred Decker and released August 14th, 1987. We made it to number 10.
Number 10. Woo-hoo. It's a milestone.
It is a milestone.
We haven't killed each other yet.
No, this has actually been fun.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
Make sure you look for us on Instagram and Facebook at Attack of the 20th Century. That's 20th. We post our movie selections there. You can comment, give your thoughts, and they just might make it on the air. To celebrate our 10th episode ever, we decided to put together two top 10 lists.
Top 10.
Because the number 10, what do you do with the number 10, you know?
Sounds like a top 10 list.
It's got to be a top 10 list. So we're going to do two. We're going to do top 10 favorite actresses and top 10 favorite actors.
All right.
And we're going to combine our list together to make the top 10.
Yeah, because Jeff was trying to steal my entries to the list.
I did.
We have to combine.
Hey, I went first. You snooze, you lose. I took some that she would have. So we're not going to spend a ton of time on this because we're going to talk through 20 different actors. So that could take, you know, a good hour if we wanted it to.
Yeah. If you don't know who we're mentioning, go look them up.
Yeah. Look them up.
If this is something that we knew how to do, I could say we'll leave the list in the show notes, but we don't do show notes. Oops.
All right. Well, let's start with actresses. Ladies first.
All right. Actresses.
And why don't you go with one? I'll go with one. We'll go back and forth.
Okay. I'm afraid our readers are going to notice a theme. In
our readers?
List. You guys read readers? Do they read? Nope. I guess they don't read because we don't have show notes. Our listeners. I don't know where that came from. But anyhow, readers, listeners, however you are digesting this podcast.
Now we're edibles. Okay. This is weird. Listen, number 10 has gone in a strange direction.
Disclaimer, I did have a medical procedure this morning, so here we go. All right, so there might be a theme in my choices.
Oh, yeah.
Anyhow, so my first actress is going to be Emma Thompson.
Ah, yes. From what movie did she really catch your eye on?
My favorite Emma Thompson is Much Ado About Nothing, when she is opposite of Kenneth Branagh in the Shakespeare.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, in a good old Shakespeare adapted to movie.
Mm-hmm. Now, were they an item or something for a while?
Possibly. You know, I don't keep up on the gossip, so.
Yeah,
That's a very possible thing.
I think of her, let's see, of course, from the Harry Potter series.
Yep. Do you remember who she plays in Harry Potter?
McGonagall?
No.
I don't know. I like Harry Potter, but I'm not like immersed in the Harry Potter world like you guys are.
She's Trelawney. She plays Trelawney.
Oh, okay.
Crazy one with the glasses that lives up in the tower.
You know, there's a Will Ferrell movie called Stranger Than Fiction.
Oh, yeah.
Where she's a writer.
Yes, she's fantastic in that.
And she's writing his life. I think that is just such a good film. It's underrated.
It is. It's very artsy.
Yeah.
I like that.
I love that kind of stuff. All right, so I'll go next. Meryl Streep, I'm a big fan.
She's a classic.
She's a classic. I know her and love her from a movie that probably most of you have not seen, and that's an Albert Brooks movie called Defending Your Life.
Yep.
And she's the female lead in that, and fantastic.
She does do a great job in that, for sure.
Of course, I grew up, my mom was a big fan of, what was that movie? Out of Africa.
Oh, yeah.
And so she's in that one, too. And I mean, she's been in a ton of movies.
Exactly.
She's been in, I think, Woody Allen. I'm a big fan of Woody Allen, too. I would say Hannah and Her Sisters, I think. Maybe she was one of the sisters. No. I think she's like a mean, bitter ex-wife of his in another movie. Maybe she's been in both. Woody Allen tends to use a lot of the same
people. Yeah, he likes his people.
But who do you got next for
us? Okay, next for me would be Dame Judi Dench, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I called that one. I knew that was going to come up.
And she's in, you know, everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even James Bond.
Even James Bond.
New James Bond. So, yeah. Judi Dench. She is quintessential, amazing British actress.
Yeah. Yeah, that's that one's a hard one to argue against. So my next, this would be number 4, would be Kate Winslet.
No, another Brit.
Another Brit.
I'm not the only one with a theme here.
Yeah, yeah. yeah, Kate's great. I mean, I like her in everything. I mean, she's just great. What's the the one, I never remember the name of it, but it's Spotless, Eternal Sunshine.
Oh, Eternal Mind. Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Yes, those, yes.
With
Gosh,
Jim Carrey.
I haven't seen that in so long. Yes.
I love that she basically takes on Jim Carrey's personality in that movie, and he kind of takes on more of a style that she would normally do.
Right, more serious.
More serious. And then obviously Titanic is a classic. What was it? The Holiday is another one that she's fantastic
in.
Oh,
yes, I love The Holiday. That's a good movie for Christmas time watching.
And there's a Jane Austen movie. Which one is that? She's the younger
Sense
sister.
Sense and Sensibility.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, she's fantastic in that.
Yeah.
Another Emma Thompson movie.
Hey. So number five?
All right, number five would be Maggie Smith.
Okay, yeah.
Another great British dame.
I called that one too, by the way.
Yes, yes, yes. See, Jeff helped me make my list. My brain was going dead. Yeah, but no, Maggie Smith, obviously love her in Downton Abbey, if you're a Downton Abbey fan. But she's been in so many things. I mean, from young to old. What have we seen her in like an old...
She was in...
A Sandals and Swords
movie.
Yeah,
Clash of the Titans.
Yes, Clash of the Titans from way back. She's been around a long time.
She's the baddie in that.
Yes, yeah.
So next, I'll go Kate Beckinsale. Underworld is a really great series that I love.
You do love Underworld, yes.
And she sells, even though I think she's pretty small, she kind of sells being a kick butt, you know,
tough.
Martial arts.
Yeah.
You know, like she just plays all that great. I mean... That series is really put her on this list. But I also liked her in Click with Adam Sandler.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah, just completely different role. And I almost had a chance to meet her. She came to the Tampa Bay Comic Con.
Really?
And she had a problem with a stalker.
Oh.
Yeah.
Creepy.
And so, like...
It wasn't you, was it?
No, it wasn't me.
Okay.
I like her, but I don't like her that much. But yeah, they... She got weirded out and left, and there were cops involved. And
oh man,
it made me miss out on my chance to meet her, get a picture with her and everything. But yeah, who's next for you?
Next for me, another Brit, Olivia Colman.
Mm-hmm.
I love crime dramas, and so I think my first, like, really paid attention to Olivia Colman was where she plays opposite of David Tennant. And now I can't think of the... Broadchurch.
Broadchurch, yeah.
And that, she was just fabulous. So well played in that. And then, of course, you know, she's cropped up in so many other things. Most recently, she is playing Elizabeth II in The Crown and doing it just fabulously. So,
yeah,
really enjoy Olivia Colman.
I don't know if I've seen her in anything. Because
really?
I didn't watch Broadchurch.
No, and you haven't watched any of The Crown with me, I don't think.
Mm-mm.
Have you? No.
Maybe an episode here and there.
I think you'd recognize her if you saw her. She's,
I know the face in my mind, but I don't know what else she's been in that
she's
I would have
fantastic.
Seen.
I love her as an actress.
Okay, the next two I have are TV actresses predominantly. Elizabeth Montgomery, she played Samantha in Bewitched.
Yes.
So I grew up watching I Dream of Jeannie and Bewitched and a lot of other... shows like that. And I thought of, you know, well, why isn't Barbara Eden on this list? I mean, Barbara Eden was like funny and sweet.
Right.
But Sam was the one that had the smarts.
Yeah, yeah.
She was always the one that had to figure everything out. Mm-hmm. And I mean, she kind of grew up as kind of a TV mom, you know, in a way.
Yeah, really.
And, you know, she really creeped me out. I saw her when I was a kid play Lizzie Borden in a film.
Oh, yeah, I've never seen that.
Yeah, it's creepy.
I've heard that's quite scary.
And one of my favorite Twilight Zone episodes she's in, I want to say it's either season 2 or 3, the very first episode where, what's his name? Charles Bronson is like the last American and she's like the last Russian from a big nuclear war that took place.
Yes.
And, it's them kind of overcoming that mistrust.
Right.
To, you know, like, well, it's really just us and all those other things
exactly.
don't matter anymore. And of course, they don't speak the same language, but she looks completely different in that. And
really?
Just, yeah. I mean, she does so much acting with just her face and body movements and everything because she's not speaking.
I was going to say, well, she probably doesn't know Russian, right?
No.
So. All right, so my last on the list would be Helena Bonham Carter.
Oh, yeah. She almost made my list. She was an honorable mention for me.
Yeah, we see her in so much. She's also in The Crown, does a great job of playing Princess Margaret. And then, of course, the Harry Potter series. She's an amazing Bellatrix Lestrange. Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, the list just goes on and on. She shows up in everything.
Yeah.
The new takes on Alice in Wonderland, which, you know, our daughter is real peeved at because they do not follow the books. But she's there being her quirky Helena Bonham Carter self. She really fits in that, you know.
The Tim Burton world.
Yeah, Tim Burton, Johnny Depp kind of quirky niche. So.
Yeah, she's like in Dark Shadows as well.
Oh, yes, Dark Shadows.
Yeah, yeah, she's great. I mean, Bellatrix, though, I think is her career-defining role in my mind.
Oh, man, she's so good at being
But I know Bellatrix. She did a bunch of Shakespearean stuff early in her
career. Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, and that's the thing. Like, so many of the British actors and actresses, I think that's why they can hold their weight in so many different films is because they have that classical training.
Yeah.
Where they, you know, you really have to sell it to be a stage actor and, you know, so... Anyhow, I'm speaking like I have some sort of, you know...
Special insight
into acting. Yes, special insight in acting, which I can't do to save my life, so... But that's how I feel about it.
Yeah, yeah. And so I'll wrap up our top 10. I have Mary Tyler Moore.
Oh, yes. She's fun.
She's classic. I mean, my gosh. We enjoy the Mary Tyler Moore Show. We have every episode on DVD.
That's a fun one for us just to watch with the kids when we want to... Yeah. Just throw something in and watch something lighthearted.
Oh, it's all just so funny and good stuff. And it's all about the characters and the relationships. And almost the entire movie or TV series takes place in like three rooms, you know?
Yeah, it truly
Lou Grant's office, the main office, and then her apartment.
That's it.
And so
you sometimes a restaurant, that restaurant that's nearby.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes it's a restaurant, but... For the most part, they just have to rely on great writing, and her delivery is always fantastic.
Yeah. Hey, and we should get a smidge of street cred if there happens to be any person from Minnesota listening to this ever. Yeah. We've actually been to Minneapolis and seen the Mary Tyler Moore statue.
Yes. Again, so that's our top 10 favorite actresses. Next, we'll move on to our top 10 male actors.
All right.
And I'll get us started with one that I feel like... I know this guy just from seeing Gene Wilder.
Jeff stole all my picks, by the way. Mm-hmm. So I'm sharing some of his picks on here because my list was getting quite long. So
okay,
I agreed to share some of your picks.
We're going to share Gene Wilder because, I mean, you know, his defining role for most of us is Willy Wonka, of course. But I also, Blazing Saddles, you know, as crazy as that movie is, I mean, that he's so good in that.
He's really amazing.
He did several movies with Richard Pryor, and I've watched interviews with Gene Wilder talking about why it works for Richard Pryor.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of comedians, they try to one-up each other, and they push each other, and it just gets resentful.
Yeah.
But Gene Wilder, you know, he said, I knew my role in this. Like, I usually played straight. Or flabbergasted, or I would just react to Richard Pryor being funny.
Right.
And that's how that chemistry works.
Works so perfectly. What's the one we watched recently where he's trying to, it's like on a train.
Silver Streak.
Silver Streak. That was so good.
It was so good. I think that may have been the first one they worked on together. They did one, Hear No Evil, See No Evil.
Oh, yes.
One plays the blind person, one plays a deaf person, and that's also a non-PC.
Yeah.
But, And Young Frankenstein is another classic.
Oh, yes.
He co-wrote that one, too.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
All right. Yeah, who's the name that you have?
So the first one I'm going to throw out, shocker, it's another Brit, David Tennant.
Oh, yeah.
I think he first caught my attention when we started. I did not grow up watching the old Doctor Who like you did.
Uh-huh.
And so it was when, and we've mentioned this on another podcast, that our kids were little and we had a lot of time, you know, rocking babies to sleep or, you know, whatever, staying at home, just trying to find something to do together. And we started... watching the reboots of Doctor Who. And when we got to David Tennant season, I just fell in love with his character, his portrayal of the Doctor. So I loved him there. But then, of course, I've seen him go on to do so many other things and realized he has a huge backlog. And he is a classically trained Shakespearean actor and has some great stuff out there you can go and watch, too, that's Shakespearean based. And he has a podcast now that I do enjoy listening to some. His wife co-produces with him, and they're just fun to listen to. She doesn't really do the interview parts. He does all of that, but she's always in his little ad segments, and they're just fun together.
Yeah.
It sounds like she puts up with a lot of his shenanigans is what it sounds like, but I like it.
I did meet him at a Comic-Con.
Yeah, we both met him.
Yeah, you were with
actually, the whole family met him.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that was cool. He's really hilarious. And I think pretty much every Doctor Who list of your favorite doctors, David Tennant's always in the top three.
Yes.
And for a lot of people, he's the number one.
At the medical clinic I was at today, mm-hmm. the lady and I got into a conversation about Doctor Who, and David Tennant is one of her favorite doctors. Like, that was...
Part of it is he just loves the show. Like,
he does.
He grew up loving the show. And so much that he married the fifth doctor's daughter.
I was going to say, he may have taken that to an extreme.
He may have. It kind of reminds me with Nicolas Cage. He was like the biggest Elvis fan.
Oh, that's
right. And ended up marrying Elvis's daughter.
Yeah, a little strange. But
it's taking your fandom to the next level, I think.
Right?
But yeah, David Tennant, that one's a hard one to argue with. He's another Harry Potter alum.
Yeah, exactly.
Barty Crouch Jr.
Barty Crouch Jr., that's right.
So my next actor would be Kurt Russell.
Yes.
You know, if you're a John Carpenter fan,
I stole him from my list.
Yeah. He's connected at the hip with John Carpenter. I mean, between The Thing and Escape from New York and Big Trouble in Little China, which we covered in episode 2 here.
Yep.
I mean, you know, even beyond that, Captain Ron was hilarious.
So funny. Yeah.
Overboard with Goldie Hawn.
Oh, that's a classic.
Another classic. He was in Santa Claus recently, in the Santa Claus 1 and 2.
And those were fun, too. Netflix. Watch those with the kids. Those were great Christmas movies. Of course, my favorite is Tombstone.
I'm a diehard
Tombstone fan, and I love him in that movie.
And
I just love that it really showcased his versatility. Like, he's just... Because he's normally that just fun, lovable... Like, who mm-hmm. doesn't love Kurt Russell? He's just great, you know? But then he had to be the... He still had, like, his... lovable side, but mm-hmm. you know, he had to be Wyatt Earp, so it's just good.
Yeah, Tarantino's latched on him too. Like, he was in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Oh, yeah.
And he was in The Hateful Eight. I think he had a much bigger role in The Hateful
mm-hmm.
Eight.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Kurt Russell, I mean, again, these are favorite actors. He's fantastic. Again, if you watch interviews with John Carpenter, he raves about Kurt Russell, because even though the two of them are politically opposed, you know, Kurt's kind of right wing and John Carpenter's left wing, the admiration between the two, the respect
for their craft.
The craft. And, you know, Carpenter has said this in several interviews, like, Kurt Russell comes from the old school, the Disney school of acting.
Oh, yeah.
In which you come to the set and you know all of your lines.
Mm-hmm.
You're not reading in between takes and everything. Like, you just come prepared and ready to work. And he loved it. I mean, obviously, you know, you can get your takes
knocked out. Yeah,
you
do your work ahead of time. Yeah. All right. So my next is going to be a throwback, Cary Grant.
Oh, yeah. I like Cary Grant.
Yes. He's in so many of the old black and whites that I love. Lots of Hitchcock and just some really great movies out there. So anytime I see something with Cary Grant, I'm like, oh, have I seen that? I gotta watch that. So,
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, we've mentioned it several times. North by Northwest is one of my favorites. And he's awesome in that.
Yes. I'm trying to think of the one with him and Audrey Hepburn. It's in Paris. I'm my mind just went blank on the title of that one. But, it's so good. Yeah. Charade.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, that's a great one.
He's kind of like your classic leading man from back in the day.
Yeah. Debonair, but kind of funny, too.
Yeah.
You know? He's not so debonair that he's like a James Bond untouchable, you know?
Yeah.
Like, he's a real person, approachable guy, but also very handsome.
Handsome, sophisticated.
Yeah.
He definitely portrays a man that has made some money, too.
Oh, yeah.
Successful.
Yes, he feels very successful. He comes off that way for sure.
All right, my next actor I've picked is from TV, predominantly, Michael Landon.
Oh, fun.
So this is a young Jeff pick. We grew up watching... Little House on the Prairie, and he was Pa, right? And he played Pa. And, you know, it's funny how many life lessons that you figure out and learn from TV.
Oh, yeah.
Especially when you're watching as a young child. Most of the show is the kids going through tough circumstances, difficulties, and somehow they get Pa involved, and he's got to, convey whatever wisdom he's got. And, you know, so I look at him as like a father figure, you know, TV father. And then that continued on.
Dad.
Yeah, my TV dad. That continued on with Highway to Heaven.
Yep.
And, you know, that was a great show. We used to watch that one all the time. And, you know, of course, he was in Bonanza. I wasn't the biggest Bonanza fan.
Saw a lot of Bonanza in my house growing up.
Yeah. But yeah, Michael Landon, you know, he's another one when you watch in interviews, you kind of feel like, I know that guy.
Yeah.
I grew up with that guy, and, you know, I kind of love that guy.
Right, right, for sure. All right, next pick for me would be Hugh Grant. I'm pulling another Grant. We're going back to the Brits here. Yeah, so, you know, Hugh Grant, again, long list. He's done, you know, he's shown up in a lot of Jane Austen adaptations, lots of things that the BBC's put out, and just some great, fun movies. And he can play a serious character. He can play a funny, I mean, really funny character.
Oh, yeah.
Super versatile. I really enjoy Hugh Grant. Of course, he's in a lot of rom-coms, but he always plays that, you know, lovable guy. And an underrated movie that you and I both love, but I don't hear people talk about, is Music and Lyrics, which is a more modern movie of his with Drew Barrymore.
Yes.
Such a great movie.
Yeah, we love that one. That's a Jeff-approved rom-com.
Yes. That's a rom-com he will watch with me.
The Englishman that went up a hill and came down a mountain.
Oh, yes. So good. So good.
Yeah, there's something about that film. It's it reminds me of like Waking Ned Divine. It just has its own vibe to it. Kind of a small
Irish
village.
Film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one's a great one. Yeah, Hugh Grant's a great pick. Albert Brooks is my next pick. I mentioned before, you know, Defending Your Life. I love pretty much any movie that Albert Brooks has made. You know, he's a writer, director, you know, leading actor in a lot of these movies that he does.
Yeah. I think for a comedian, he's so cerebral. Like, he's a really smart guy.
Very smart. And his comedy's not for everybody. I think a lot of his movies kind of don't hit the general audience.
Right.
In
it's
the
not
beginning.
Slapstick.
And it, you know, it's one of those that builds a cult following later, right, which is a lot of the films that you and I like.
Another off the radar for him would be Finding Comedy in a Muslim World. I just love that movie. It's so good.
Yeah, that one's hilarious. The title of it and just the theme kind of got it blacklisted a bit.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But he had another one with Sharon Stone called The Muse.
Oh, yes.
That was good. And the you know, Real Life was the first one before they were actually had reality TV. He had a movie about filming a family in real life and making a movie about it.
I don't know if I've ever seen that one.
It's good. It's definitely real good. And another one, let's see, Something About America. Not Coming to America.
Obviously not that one.
Much different film. But one where he and his wife sell all of their possessions and are going to live in this RV and just travel the world and live off of the money that they've made and they've saved up.
That sounds like my dream life.
It is. They have a slight hiccup, though. Their first night, they go to Vegas to celebrate, and he doesn't realize this. And neither did his wife until it happens, but she's got a gambling problem.
Oh, no.
So he goes to bed, she's gambling, and when he wakes up, she's gambled away all of their nest egg.
No!
And so now he's got to figure out what he's going to do for work and all that. So it's just, it's one mishap after another.
Of course, of course. I might have to watch that.
It's a good one.
Oh, my goodness. All right, my next pick is, I have no idea what number.
Lost in America is what it's called.
Oh, Lost in America.
All right, yeah.
I have
I'm
heard
sorry.
Of that.
Yeah, you go ahead.
What number are we on? I don't even know what number we're on here.
I'm not sure.
I don't know. But whatever number we're on, my next pick is Colin Firth.
Oh, okay, yep.
Yep. Another Brit that can be funny, can be shy acting, can be smart, you know, can be the dashing hero of the story, too. If you're a Pride and Prejudice fan, everybody knows the best adaptation of Pride and Prejudice to film is the one with Colin Firth and Jennifer Eale. So don't come at me about that. That's just truth. That's fact.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I love me some Colin Firth. He's great.
Yeah, The King's Speech is probably my favorite role of his.
So good.
It is so good. And yeah, that one's definitely my favorite. I mean, I've seen him in a bunch of movies. Bridget Jones' Diary, he kind of plays that Mr. Darcy role again.
Yeah, has to wear the ugly Christmas sweater.
Ugly Christmas.
He's like the less pretentious Mr. Darcy in Bridget Jones. I know he's supposed to be Mr. Darcy, but he definitely is a modern version, I guess.
Yeah.
Of Mr. Darcy.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so I'll go next. Robin Williams.
Yes.
So if I were to put together like best actors of all time.
Yeah, he's up
there. That can do anything. He's in my top two, top three.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, he can, obviously he's got the comedy. I mean, he's Mrs. Doubtfire, you know, Good Morning Vietnam, and all that. He's just
even
so
as the
good.
Genie of the lamp in Aladdin. He was amazing.
Yeah, our kids grew up watching Robots. His voice acting. And that's But yeah, he's hilarious, but then he can pull the tears right out of your face.
Oh my gosh.
You know, Patch Adams was one. Even in Good Morning Vietnam, he does both.
Yeah,
he
can pull the tears out. Exactly.
What was the other one where Robert De Niro is like catatonic?
Awakening?
Yeah, Awakening.
Is that it? Oh yeah. Gosh. Man, that's a hard watch. Such a good movie, but oof, that's a hard watch.
Yeah.
The Boys School. What am I thinking of?
Dead Poets Society.
Yes, thank you. Dead Poets Society.
Good Will Hunting's another one.
Oh man, another tearjerker. Such a good movie though.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Robin Williams. I mean, he's just fantastic. When he died, I mean, that was one that just emotionally hit me.
Oof.
You know, not a lot of celebrities' death hit you. You know, hit me personally, but this one did.
Yeah.
Because he's such a big part of our childhood.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. There's a rooster crowing outside of our door.
We have a rooster now, by the way. Did we talk about that in the last podcast?
I don't know if we did or not.
So if you hear a rooster in the background, it's because, I don't know, he hears us, comes to the door, and crows.
Yes. He just showed up out of nowhere. You know, we have hens, and he found himself a couple of hens.
He found a home with some hens and some free food, so yeah. We have a rooster now.
Yep. Ladies, food, shelter, he found it all.
We have dubbed him Jaber Crow, if anybody's a Wendell Berry fan. Jaber Crow lives in our yard now.
All right, who's your last?
My last pick is, of course, another Brit, Benedict Cumberbatch. And I know you wanted to argue with me on this one. But I love him as Sherlock. I've also seen him in some older BBC movies and masterpiece things, I believe. I just like him. I like him in interviews. I like who he is.
Mm-hmm.
I like him as Doctor Strange.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I like Benedict Cumberbatch. So,
yeah.
You know, will this list stand the test of time? I think a handful of names on here definitely will. Benedict Cumberbatch might still be a little on the newer side, the young side. We'll see how he holds up.
Well, there's no doubt Sherlock, his take on Sherlock is probably my favorite.
I love it.
Of all the years. I mean, you know, Robert Downey Jr.'s was fun. We saw Tom Baker from Doctor Who play.
Yes, we have.
And then, of course, Basil Rathbone. I don't know how you say his name, but he was kind of that quintessential.
Yeah. Well, and Sherlock. We have the American adaptation with Johnny Lee. What's his name?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
I can't think of his last name, but Elementary with Lucy Liu.
Yeah.
I do like that adaptation too.
Yeah.
But I really like Benedict Cumberbatch.
You know, I think Star Trek fans, Star Trek II, where he plays Khan. That was kind of like...
Didn't like that.
Yeah, I don't know. It just wasn't all that great.
I don't have a history with Star Trek like you do, so it didn't bother me. You know? Like I didn't grow up watching Star Trek.
I mean, Ricardo Montalban was just so superior in that role.
Yeah, I get that.
Well, so our number 10 favorite actor, we both share this one, is Jimmy Stewart.
Top of the top, probably.
Yeah. He's just that aw shucks great. I mean, we loved Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. Yes. It's a Wonderful Life.
Again, he can make you laugh and make you cry in the same movie.
Like, oh, yeah.
He definitely has that ability.
Sure. He was in the Hitchcock movies, too, that were great.
Oh, yeah.
Vertigo, reviewed.
Rear Window.
And The Man Who Knew Too Much was another.
Oh, yes.
Just trying to get your kid back. Like, he just conveys all these emotions so well. He really taps into that.
And he's likable. I think that's probably, if we look through our list of people, they seem like real people. No shade to, say, the Chris Hemsworths of the world or whatever, these perfect-looking specimens of humans. But the most relatable actors and actresses look like somebody you might actually know.
Yeah.
You know, like...
Oh, yeah.
Like, these are people that you could meet any day of the week.
Yeah.
I think that makes them so relatable.
And you'd want to.
Right, exactly.
So there you have it to celebrate our 10th episode. And we went on for a little while, but you know, you got to take some time and recognize.
We're going to celebrate.
Yeah.
10 episodes.
It's a milestone. Number 10.
We probably shouldn't do a top 20 list when we get to 20 episodes.
No, we'll figure out something for 20. Today we are reviewing The Monster Squad, directed by Fred Decker. It was filmed for $12 million, only made $3.8 million in its theatrical run, and a lot of theaters pulled it after week two because it was underperforming. But since then, like so many movies that we review and love, you know, it grew to find its audience later in VHS and later DVD and now streaming.
I think it started playing on cable television too after it got pulled at some point, right?
So yeah.
All right. So we're about to talk about it, guys. So you know what that means. There will be spoilers. If you have not yet watched The Monster Squad and you don't want us to spoil it for you, pause it now, go back and watch it, and then come back here and join us to finish up the conversation. All right, so The Monster Squad, it gets only a 60% on the tomato meter on Rotten Tomatoes, but it gets a 78% audience score. So just like you said, it has found some fans out there since its box office demise. So basically, set in the 80s, you've got the classic kind of miniature 80s brat pack. It's the local gang of misfit kids, including younger siblings. And you've got a second gang of all the classic horror movies.
Oh, yeah.
And apparently there was a little bit of a squabble between, they didn't get permission from Universal to use the actual Universal horror monsters. So they had to kind of do their own take on Dracula, Creature from the Black Lagoon, which I think they call him Gillman.
Yeah, Gillman.
He looks very similar, but he's Gillman. We've got a mummy, we've got a Frankenstein's monster, and I think the difference here is he doesn't have bolts in his neck, he has bolts in his forehead.
Yes.
And who am I? Oh, a werewolf.
Wolfman.
Yeah, we have Wolfman, too, in this. So, basically, the beginning of the movie, we see, I don't know, is it 1600s? I don't even know if it told us a date.
Something like that.
Sometime way back in history, we have Dr. Van Helsing. He has this special amulet. He's going to vanquish all of the evil monsters out of the world. But something kind of goes awry, and so the amulet gets brought to modern day 1980s America and is hidden in someone's basement. And it just so happens to be the 100th anniversary of the last time this amulet could be used for the monsters to either take over the world or for the good guys to win and vanquish the monsters.
Yes.
So of course these kids end up with Van Helsing's diary. They know that it's the 100th anniversary. These monsters are coming into their town. They're going to take over. All these like weird things are happening all around town. And of course, this is an 80s movie after all. The kids figure it out before the adults, and they have to save the day.
Yeah.
So this little gang of misfits and cursing 80s children have to alert the adults and get rid of all the monsters before they take over the world.
Yes. Yes, the cops are useless. The military is useless.
Yeah, any adult figure in this movie is completely useless.
Yeah.
And maybe idiotic.
Yeah, pretty much dumb butts. And then the kids save the world pretty much. So
yeah.
Again, that's a spoiler. But what did you think was going to happen? You know, end with Dracula sucking all the kids' blood and
No, of course. Yeah, it's a good 80s monster slash kids flick. So it's got to have a good ending.
So this one's a little different than a lot of them that we review. A lot of them, because I do most of the picking of the movies, you know, are ones that I've seen and I have a good idea about do I like or not. Or this is one, actually, I've never seen. So even at 43, I would have been around when this movie came out and I should have known about it, but I didn't know about it.
Nope.
And I went several years before I found out about the film. And the first time I saw it was this past Sunday with my wife.
That's right.
My initial thought was it's very much of its time, you know, a 1980s kind of preteen slash teenager movie. Lots of 80s cheese, but fun. And I can see why it's so loved.
Yes.
So, yeah, what about you? When did you first see this one?
I don't remember an exact date. I was probably between 10 and 12, somewhere in that range. I think it was one of those like slumber party type movies. Somebody had it on VHS. We would have watched it. Or it would just come on television sometimes. And I probably saw a TV filtered version of it first, maybe, because these little preteens do a lot of cursing.
Yeah, they do.
Which was pretty on par for an 80s movie.
Yeah.
And maybe even now. Yeah, so I kind of loved it then because it was like a monster movie. You got the thrill of a monster movie, but it wasn't overly scary. It wasn't overly dark.
Yeah.
It was like Ghostbusters light, really.
Yeah.
And so all the kids loved it back then.
Yeah.
You know? So watching it again this weekend as an adult, I'm like, oh, yeah. If I had just seen this as an adult, it's cute, but
yeah.
It's not groundbreaking by any stretch of the imagination. So, you know, but it definitely, there's some nostalgia there. So that's always fun.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So I looked at, you know, what is the negative talk about this movie? What are people so mad about, you know? And there's, of course, quite a bit about some of the language that the kids use, and not just the swear words, but kind the derogatory, you know, using kind of slurs against homosexuals. And but they're using it not in that context. They're using it as like cut downs.
Yeah, and, exactly. And, there's a you know, a heavier kid that gets picked on quite heavily too.
Which, for being overweight, and so. They call him Fat Kid, I think is his name.
Like, yeah, that's like literally the name they've given him.
Yeah.
Poor guy.
So, I mean, you know, it didn't really bother me because in the 1980s and really the 1990s when I grew up, that's how kids talked to each other.
Right. And we didn't understand body positivity in the
1980s. No, no. It was totally, if you have a flaw, we're going to pick on that.
And, we're going to nail you to the wall with that.
Yeah, we're going to drill that time and time again. Just so you don't have any self-confidence when you grow up. And,
hey, people wonder what's wrong with the world today. We all grew up in the 80s, man. Give us a break.
Give us a break. One thing I wanted to mention before we get into our high fives, you know, the special effects. The practical effects of, like, the mummy, especially that scene where the mummy's unraveling, that was all just so perfect.
Oh, it was really well done. The kid, like, shoots the bow and arrow, ties one of the mummy strips to an arrow and shoots it to a tree, and then he just unravels as they're driving down the road. That's a really great scene.
That was a great scene. I mean, the only thing that bothered me was how he shot the bow because the... like, he wasn't aiming for a tree. He was just shooting straight out and then let go.
That's
true. I thought, well, how did you know the tree was going to be right there?
Yeah.
You should have
What we didn't mention is the mummy's hanging onto the tailgate of a truck they're driving down the road.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, there's a scene where the wolfman goes from being a human to the wolfman, and that whole scene is just done flawlessly, the transition. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. And the matte paintings look great. It just looked great. The whole practical effects side of things.
Yeah, that opening scene when we're in like the, I don't know what we're in, 1800s maybe, 1600s, I don't remember. But
the big gothic castle.
Yeah, it looked very like a Hammer horror movie. Like,
yeah.
It really got that tone and that feel right.
Yeah, they nailed that. The filmography looked great. The lighting was nice. Mm-hmm. You know, real colorful, bright film when it needed to be. But then, you know, when it was dark, you could see everybody really well. But you know, it captured that kind of macabre gothic feel.
Right.
They did a great job of just getting feel and ambiance with the special effects. And you know, I will say, being an Evil Dead and Army of Darkness fan, when that portal opens up, that was extremely familiar effect.
Oh, yeah.
For me.
Did I hear or read somewhere that it was the same effects team that did like Ghostbusters?
Oh, maybe so.
That wasn't the same effect.
Big Trouble
scene
in Little China.
Big Trouble in Little China. So that's why there's a lot of lightning and stuff too.
Yeah.
And it all looks very familiar. It's the same effects team that did the, you know, the lightning when the portal opens up and, and when they're bringing Frankenstein's monster back to life too. They have to, you know, channel some lightning to bring him back to life. That's all.
Yeah.
That's why it all looks so familiar.
Yeah. That all just looked great.
Those guys must have made bank in the 80s.
Yeah, they had to.
That effects team.
So I'll get it started with high fives. The first high five I'll give to this movie is the chemistry between kid actors. It was all very believable. I didn't feel like these kids were acting like an adult was standing over them saying, all right, next line, here's what I want you to do.
Yeah.
You know, like everything flowed really well.
Mm-hmm.
It was very believable. You always hear, like, it's kind of the kiss of death for a movie director to have to work with kids or animals.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's not the case here. These kids, I thought, really sold this picture. I mean, imagine how horrible it would have gone if these kids acted, you know, real wooden-like.
Oh, yeah. No, they sounded like kids having real kid conversations.
Yeah.
Like, it didn't sound, you know, it didn't sound like acting. It sounded like if these kids were in their treehouse, making a little club, this is how they talk to each other, which is great.
Yeah, yeah. It very much reminded me of Goonies, which was done a couple years earlier.
Yes, yeah.
You know, that you got the feeling that these kids liked each other, and they just, they really, they had that camaraderie.
Exactly.
And it came across on film. Another high five I'll give is that scene when Dracula, it's near the end of the movie. It's Dracula's BA moment where he's taking out cops left and right.
Oh, yeah.
Coming down the road. And you're like, all right, where's this guy been? Because, you know, most of the time, he's kind of in the background,
or
he's trying
to
look.
Well, he's sending Frankenstein to go do his bidding, right?
Yeah.
Like, he sent Frankenstein off to go find the diary and to kill the kids, which obviously Frankenstein's monster did not do.
Yeah.
He ends up with this little bond, this friendship with the little girl and then the rest of the gang.
Well, that scene, we were all like, wow, that's really cool. Because, you know, we joked that, how far away is he anyway? Because it looked like
it took forever for him to come down the street.
At first, it looked like he's like 10 feet away. But then, it takes him 30 seconds to walk those 10 feet, taking out cop after cop after cop. But that whole scene was really cool. Another scene I'll give a high five for is where Frankenstein approaches the little girl for the first time. It was completely a throwback to the old Universal version of the Frankenstein's monster. And of course, when we watched that, years ago, we were shocked. We saw that as a married couple.
So tragic. So tragic.
You never kill kids in movies now. No. And, in the original, Frankenstein's monster picks up this little girl and throws her in the lake. She can't swim, so she drowns to her death. And it's pretty, shocking. Even in 2020, or 2019, 2020, when we saw it, we were like, what the heck?
It was tough.
But they don't do that in this one.
No, that was going to be my high five, actually, is the sweet little twist on the Frankenstein story is that, he actually befriends the little girl, and the little girl kind of softens his spirit. And then she introduces him to the rest of the gang, which is a great scene in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Where she's like, hey, guys. Hey, guys. And they're like, leave us alone. She's the little sisters. So they kind of all treat her like, she's second rate or whatever. But then she's like, would you look? And they realize that, oh, my gosh, she has Frankenstein's monster. And then he ends up being like a hero, really. He really becomes a hero to them.
He turns on Dracula and, sticks up for the kids, which is great. Great twist on the original. So,
yes.
And then the next high five I'll give, this is the last one I'll do before I turn it over to you. I enjoy things that are kind of creepy and macabre. And this movie is basically an introduction to that world, and it's kind of kid-friendly macabre. And there's tons of scenes that are these creepy, slow stalking scenes. When the brides of Dracula are walking down the road, and that whole visual, their arms outreached and everything, it just looks really cool.
Yeah.
Or where baddies will just pop up out of nowhere and scare the crap out of kids, and they'll scream, and just it's real effective. It's great at creating that, that old school gothic feel that I really love. Like what I like about horror is that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I agree with all of your high fives there. And the only thing that I would add is just the nostalgia, which I know they weren't planning for this when they did it because they did it in the 80s. So it would have been just a modern, present day, really, movie at the time. But it's held up so well that now, and I heard someone else point out, I think we were watching another commentary on it or something, and the guy talked about how, shows like Stranger Things now, which does have a great throwback feel to the 80s, but they could have taken a few notes from a movie like this because you go into the kid's bedroom, he's got Hulk wallpaper on the wall, he's got a Transformers poster on the wall. And I think it's in Stranger Things where the kid has like an Evil Dead 2 poster. Well, a kid that age is not going to have an Evil Dead 2 poster, they're going to have
a superhero or Star Wars or something like that.
Yeah. At that period of time in the 80s. So, I know they weren't working towards that, but they did that period of the 80s so well in their set design that it really holds up today. And for those of us that grew up in that time period, it feels very nostalgic.
Yeah.
So I enjoy that part of it a lot.
I'm sure there were fans of Evil Dead 2 back in the day when it first was released. But you have to remember, too, merchandise was hard to obtain.
Yeah.
I was a big Doctor Who fan. And I remember the first time I saw a Doctor Who shirt in the store or even just on Amazon. And I was like, wow, there's actually a Doctor Who shirt out there that you can get.
Right.
But that was several years later as an adult male that I saw this. And
right. Well, when Amazon existed.
Yeah.
We didn't have that as a kid, you know?
No, you didn't have that. And so it's not saying that there weren't fans of things like Evil Dead 2 or whatever, but you had all this Star Wars stuff that was in your face and, Superman and the Hulk, Spider-Man, that stuff was just all very much available to
everywhere.
You.
Everywhere,
And it was cool, you know?
Yeah, G.I. Joe, that would have been in the mix.
Transformers.
Yeah, exactly.
So now we'll go into the low points. And, this is, again, take this with a grain of salt because I saw this as an adult. I did not grow up on this film. And so there's several movies that I love and talk about that, you know, my perspective is very different because of the age that I saw it.
Right.
And, you know, how I felt, what I was going through, you know, the experiences that kind of made that movie watching experience.
Who you were watching it with.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, like watching it as an adult on Sunday, my low point is like this movie was just so predictable.
Sure.
Everything about it was familiar. You know, it just felt like, you know, there was nothing that surprised me. And, you know, I'm not an extremely alert or like I can't like predict movies like you can predict movies.
Oh, let's not go there.
But, you know, everything that they did, I kind of called like three or four steps in advance. And so just so many tropes were used in this.
A little Scooby-Doo-ish.
It was a little Scooby-Doo-ish. And it, you know, borrowed a lot from Goonies. I know they say it's like borrowed a lot from Little Rascals, but I definitely saw a ton of like Spielberg and Goonies kind of influence.
Oh, yeah.
And then the Universal Monster stuff. But anyway, from beginning to end, I kind of knew what was going to happen next. Mm-hmm. But, you know, again, like, it's not to take away from the movie. Like, as a kid, you know, if I'm watching this, maybe I wouldn't have thought that far in advance. The other low point I'll give it, and this is the only one I'll ding it on, is I wanted more from those classic Universal monsters.
Right.
I didn't feel like they developed any of them. They really rely on you just knowing who these characters are and saying, all right, well, there's your bad guys. And, you know, they don't develop them at all.
No.
And I wish they would have, you know, other than Frankenstein, they developed Frankenstein.
Yeah, he's the only one that really gets a personality.
Yeah, he's got kind of a story arc in the film.
Right.
You know, you look at the poor creature from the Black Lagoon, or Gillman, he really does nothing. You know, he picks up Frankenstein's coffin out of the lagoon, and the next time we see him, you know, he gets blasted in the chest by a shotgun. Yeah, he
pops up out of the manhole in the street, and they just blast him to bits.
And he's dead.
That's all we ever saw of him.
Wow, well, that stinks, you know. Yeah.
Looks like they spent a lot on his costuming, too. Like, I mean, it was a legit Gillman creature from the Black Lagoon suit.
Yeah.
You thought they would have given him a little more screen time.
And same thing with the Brides of Dracula. I told you how amazing they looked. Their costumes and the way they walked was so creepy. And just to see a kid, like, take him out with, you know, I think an arrow once or twice, or stabbing one in the heart.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, they walked wooden stakes.
Yeah, they walked at, like, a snail's pace. And, you know, they after one got killed, it seems like the other two would have, like, made shocking faces or something.
Yeah, tried to fight
retreated back, or did something different. But they just kept walking towards him, kind of like American Revolution soldiers, like marching towards their enemy. So that was kind of like, I don't know, it was just disappointing. You know, even Dracula is kind of this kind of a campy, typical, you know, I want to take over the world baddie.
Right.
And I don't know, like if I was to put on my producer hat, I would say, hey, why don't we take two or three monsters and let's develop them.
Sure.
Give them some sort of backstory or give some sort of, you know, a story arc other than, hey, we're bad guys and we're here. We're going to try to kill you.
Yeah, and aren't these bad guys, they're usually lone wolves, right? You don't, they're not usually working together. So why? How did all these guys get together to make their own baddies gang, right? Yeah. Like, where's the backstory for that?
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, you know, but again, maybe I'm nitpicking a little bit, but it's just me loving these classic monsters. You know, I kind of felt like they were a little bit mishandled here.
You wanted more of the, less of the kids, more of the monsters.
Yeah, I did. or something. If we're going to, if you know, more of something from them. Right? So maybe we don't need the all-star cast. Maybe we get two or three.
Right.
And we just develop them further.
Yeah. So my low points, are we ready for that?
Yep. Go for it.
So I just have to bring this up because we mentioned this from another movie we reviewed, is The Bat.
Oh.
If you have Dracula, you have to at some point have him morph into a bat, and nobody gets the bat right.
They like, can we not?
Does PETA not let people train and hire actual bats for movie filming? Because, man, they're bad. Just every bat I've ever seen is bad.
Yeah.
So this poor bat. Now, I will say the transformation, when we see bits of, like, I think we see just Dracula's hand transforming from a wing into a hand again, or maybe vice versa. That was actually cool filming. That looked really cool. But when it's just the bat and the bat flies off, again, it looks like a cat toy on a stretchy string, you know. Like, it's just kind of goofy looking. I also have a beef with Dracula because almost the very end of the movie, the little sister that's kind of like, she ends up almost being the hero of the day. He's about to get her though and take her out, and he picks her because she has the, does she have the amulet in her hand, I think is why he's going for her.
She had something.
And so he picks her up by her face and is holding, which he's a bad guy like that. That I don't have an issue with, but he calls her the B word. And I'm just like, I know it's an 80s movie and you guys like to throw a lot of gratuitous language around, but I don't know. It felt lame for a guy from the, I don't even know, the edges of history to use the B word. Like, I expect Dracula to have some, I don't know, Shakespearean sounding vocabulary.
You couldn't
Transylvanian
picture,
something.
You couldn't picture Christopher Lee doing that.
No, it felt beneath him.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyhow, I didn't like that part.
It seems like he would have bopped her on the head or shoved her on the ground, like while taking the amulet out of her hand.
Right. Why did he pick her up and stay? It was kind of a long scene. He's holding her, staring at her face.
Yeah.
It takes forever to like eke out his one line of "Give me that amulet, you beep." You know, and I'm like, this is unnecessary. Too far, Dracula. You have stooped to a new low, man. I don't know.
It just seemed uncool. Like, I would have liked it better if he shoved her on the ground, taken it, and then have her come up and bite him on the leg or something, or done something to buy them some time while somebody else comes. Right.
Held her hostage or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just didn't like that at all.
Yeah.
It
seemed
the
like kind of lazy writing.
Face. Yeah. Yeah, it was. Or maybe even just a little bit 80s cliche.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, as far as other actors and stuff that were in the movie, I felt like we mentioned the kids did great. And I will call out the kid that played Rudy, kind of the older boy. He's a cool kid. He's a good-looking boy, but he sticks up for his little nerdy outcast friends.
We never really get why. They don't give us the backstory. Why does he befriend the little nerd Monster Squad club?
Yeah, yeah.
He sticks up for them against other bullies at school. And he's clearly like the cool kid that smokes and dresses like John Travolta from Grease. You know, and you know who he is. Did you ever grow up? Did you watch Kids Incorporated growing up?
Yeah.
He's like the lead. I kept thinking, this kid's so familiar. He's like the dark-headed boy in Kids Incorporated, like one of the lead little singers. If you don't know what we're talking about, you're probably much younger than we are.
I know the song in my head
You'll have to Google. I know. It started playing in my head, too. Yeah. So he was one of the big Kids Incorporated actors.
Yeah, he was great. The kid they called Fat Kid, named Horace, I found out he's dead now.
Yeah, he died pretty young, didn't
pneumonia,
he?
Yeah.
Oh, sad.
That's sad. I did see the kid, though, that played Rudy and the kid that played Sean, Andre Gower. I saw them on YouTube doing interviews and stuff. And they, you know, what was really refreshing about it is they go to conventions, they stay in touch with their fans, and they knew everything about the movie.
Oh, that's
cool. The backstory. They were quoting lines from the film. You know, I've seen this from going to conventions and stuff and talking to actors and seeing them talk. A lot of them aren't big fans of their own stuff.
Right. Or they did it and they walked away from it. They don't like follow it or anything.
Right. It was a gig and they went on to another gig and they're actors looking for work. But, you know, maybe it's because these kids didn't have a ton of work. but they, it was cool that they clearly loved this work that they had done, and they were proud of what it has become
over
the years. So yeah, I thought that was cool. Another little trivia bit: Duncan Rieger, I don't know how you say his name, but that plays Count Dracula.
Oh,
it says Liam Neeson was the original choice.
Oh,
but Duncan's performance, like in the tryouts and stuff, just blew them away.
Wow,
they're like, this is our guy.
That's funny because he didn't really have that many lines at all.
No.
And Liam Neeson has a special set of skills, but they're not Dracula skills, apparently.
Barely not. And then, so there's another one. Jonathan Grease was kind of that desperate man, they're calling him on Wikipedia. But,
right.
He's the one that morphs into the Wolfman.
Uh-huh.
That actor is the same actor that played Uncle Rico in Napoleon Dynamite.
I just, in my head, saw a football fly across the street and hit a van in the
face. Yeah.
Good old Uncle Rico.
Yeah. He's, man.
That's funny.
When Mary Ellen Trainor showed up as the mom, I said, man, she made a career playing mom. So she was the mom in Goonies as well.
Yeah, she's the 80s mom. That's her.
That's what we think of.
Yeah.
But yeah, any other actors or actresses you want to call out?
What was the little girl's name? I really, like, she sold it. She was, and the younger brother, too.
Oh, yeah.
Those two, as far as the kid actors go, They were so in their character. Like, they just did a really good job.
Yeah, they did. They did great. Oh, one other one I'll talk about.
I
the
think
dad.
Ashley Bank was the little girl, Phoebe.
Okay. Yeah.
She was just adorable, and I loved her. She was very believable.
Yeah, she did great. She was kind of ultimately the hero of the film.
She really is, yeah.
But Stephen Macht, the Detective Del Crenshaw.
Oh, yeah, the dad.
The dad, I thought this was kind of cool. He was Gene Roddenberry's original choice to play Jean-Luc Picard in the Next Generation series.
Really?
And, of course, that went to Patrick Stewart.
Yeah.
But his take would have been a completely different take.
Yeah. Wow, so different.
Yeah. His look is a little more of that Captain Kirk look, I think, kind of that classic.
Yeah, the head full of hair, brushed back kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. For some reason, he kind of reminds me of like a young Clint Eastwood.
Okay.
I don't know why.
Yeah, I can see that.
It's not identical, but there's something there that makes me think of that.
Yeah. All right. Is this a yay or a nay for you? Final summations.
Okay. I'm going to give it a little yay. Not a big overwhelming yay, but a little yay. Just because it does have a little nostalgic piece of my heart from seeing it as a kid in the 80s. And there is, you know, it's just so quintessential 80s when you watch it. So yeah, it's a little yay. You know, there you go. It's PG-13. If I were going to watch it with our kids, we'd have to do some filtering or skipping or whatever. But
yeah.
So it gets a little yay as like a watchable with kids.
Yeah.
Nostalgic movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. You know, I thought about, like, I went several years without seeing this movie. I could have gone the rest of my life and not seen this movie, and I would be just fine. I mean, there's nothing new about it versus what you see with other movies. If you've seen Goonies, you've seen a superior film.
Yeah.
But this one is special, I guess, in that it does introduce you to the Universal Monsters, but in an 80s kids context.
Yeah.
So it's fun. It's 80s. It's of the time. I think it's a worthwhile watch. Sure. But okay. I agree. I think we're in agreement there. A little yay.
A little yay.
We do have some fan mail we'll read through. Remember again on Instagram at Attack of the 20th Century. So Kelstar.ak responded that he loved it. All right. Short but sweet review there.
He loved it. Awesome.
PK from the Crypt 84 says, childhood favorite, The Goonies for horror fans.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's Goonies for horror fans.
I definitely agree with that. Primitive Paints says, one of the best and a perfect introduction to the Universal Monsters for youngsters.
Huh.
Yeah. I agree with that. I mean, again, you know, I think we keep talking about a little bit of the, you know, the profanity or the guy looking at a girl changing and stuff like that.
Right.
The 80s did that, a lot of that kind of stuff that you wouldn't see today in today's, like if it's targeted towards kids.
Right.
They wouldn't have that. That's why I feel like it is, you get kind of mixed messages from the 80s.
Yeah. This is very true.
Primitive Paints also went on to say, awesome. Watched this last week and introduced my boy to it. We loved it.
Oh, awesome. Somebody's watching along with us.
Yeah. Michael McCaslin says, Wolfman's got nards, LOL.
McCaslin, what's up?
That's pretty hilarious.
That was a great scene.
Talk the Ska said, I have made countless friends watch this film.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
So it's not just me that has a nostalgic 80s kids attachment to it.
No, people that love this really love it. I probably think, like, when we go to do House 2, it's going to be similar how I feel about House 2.
Really?
Yeah, just I love it. It's a special place in my heart. You know, I could go on and on and on. But if you were to just evaluate it based on its cinematic merits, you know, it's really not the Citizen Kane of in 1987.
Sure.
It's just, but it's a fun watch, you know? I think we could just, it's okay to have those kind of movies.
Yeah. Oh, that's entertainment.
Yeah, entertainment. All right, so what are we doing next week?
Okay, the next movie in the docket is Battle Beyond the Stars from 1980. It is a PG rated space opera. Mm-hmm. I'm told it's basically Magnificent Seven in space.
Yes.
So if you're into B movies, this is going to be the first truly B movie that we're covering yes. on the podcast.
Yeah, we're going to dip our toe in that water and just see how we like it, you know?
I think B movies for me are always overdubbed with Mystery Science Theater. So,
yes.
So we're going to watch it without the Mystery Science Theater jokes, right?
Right.
Okay.
It's going to have to stand on its own merit.
Okay. We'll see how it does.
All right. Yeah, we're looking forward to that. It is on Amazon Prime, and it is also on Tubi TV for free if you don't have Amazon Prime. So awesome. Go check it out. We'll review it next week and post our podcast. Until then, have a great week.
Enjoy your movies, guys. Peace out.
Peace out.